Please note that this podcast contains references to conflict-related violence, including sexual violence. Listener discretion is advised. 25 years ago, the world made a promise to protect women in conflict and to ensure they could lead the way toward peace. For the Women, Peace and Security event, we spoke with six remarkable individuals about this shared mission. This six-episode series brings you those conversations in full. In this episode, Cecilia Weigers from the Netherlands.
My name is Cecilia Weigers. I'm a Dutch diplomat. I'm specialized in crisis and post-crisis context. So peace and security are my bread and butter and daily work in the field, preferably.
Do you know the first moment that you realized you wanted to work in this field?
I realized that this was some kind of a mission on my part when I worked on the dossier of honorary killings in Pakistan. This was my first diplomatic post. I realized how important it was to support women, and then understood that in the field, you will meet these women. You see what they are going through, and at the same time, you are connected to human rights commissions and activists in the country, and you can translate it into, for instance, resolutions in New York. So this was a perfect chain of actions, how from the field you could be also impactful on a more abstract and international level.
What motivates you, so much for this?
My profession is diplomacy, and it means that the first question that you ask yourself when you're dealing with somebody else, who is this person? And how would it be to be in her or his place? So you learn this professionally, which means that you get a better understanding what motivates people and why, for instance, in conflict and crisis and post-crisis context, why people behave like they behave. And only then you can make impact that is good for us as the Netherlands, but also for the country and the people in it that you are working in. And so it's that bridging, the understanding and coming up with something practical that makes a difference for them and for us, that is very satisfying. So it has to do with understanding each other's position and imagining that, for instance, you are this woman in Afghanistan or in Burundi or in Mali, where I just worked. By having that common understanding, I think you can come to better solutions.
In what way do you think we in this world, when it comes to women, peace and security, like in what way are we already seeing the power of understanding each other?
Well, I've seen a lot of examples in the field, as we call it, as a diplomat. For instance, in Afghanistan, I worked in a police training mission where we focused on the women in the force. We saw at some point that the police women were walking on slippers while the men had boots, or the female lawyers needed a male companion in order to do exam for the bar. To become a lawyer, the men would not have to do that. So we got a very practical solution of not having them travel to Kabul to do the exam there, with the whole logistic operation to have a male companion, and organize that they could do the exam in Kunduz, for instance, so that more female lawyers could join the bar association. For me, women are always, part and parcel of the solution. Without them, it doesn't work to come to peace and security. It has to do with that we make sure that they are being heard. And I think also is that as a diplomat, you always have the convening power. So you can get several parties in the same room and in the same space and let them speak to each other. Often it's not even necessary to dominate a conversation, but to let them speak about possible solutions. And I think it's that inclusivity, so the inclusion, that makes that people realize we actually need each other. I think also when it comes to the peace processes that we are also working in as diplomats, is that women should be involved from the start And experience has taught us that this leads to better results. I know, for instance, in Mali, where I just worked as a diplomat, is that also there in peace process, women were at the table. But it remains a challenge as long as the situation at home is not addressed, how we relate at home to each other, women and men, this will always be translated also in more official settings. So just an example from Burundi, for instance, where we see a nation that is suffering from a collective trauma. You remember Burundi and Rwanda, the genocide that took place. But the same in Afghanistan or in Mali, you see that on a family level, people have trouble to come out of the survival mode. And once you're in the survival mode, all other things are less important except to come through another day. And to get people out of that motion, you need the whole family and address why they are stuck. And I truly believe in that process based on families and communities to make people talk to each other again and share what is hindering them. And it is to us, diplomats or the Netherlands as a Western country, to accompany these processes. And you can only do so much if there's already something. So this is my big lesson as a diplomat, is that you cannot enforce these kinds of processes. It has to come from communities themselves.
Have you had an experience in your work career that really inspired you, that you saw that you needed to start from community instead of the other way around?
I started at Foreign Affairs looking into the reconciliation, national reconciliation processes. South Africa is, of course, a very important example with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that had a great impact. But the same concept we see in various countries where individuals, men and women, get recognition of what they have suffered through, often also with the perpetrators present. So these are very sensitive processes, and each conflict context, each country, each community needs a different approach in order to be successful. And those who have committed serious crimes naturally should be also held accountable. So it's that system that I found very interesting and also worthwhile to support. A concrete example in Afghanistan, I've seen, for instance, a process that is called victim-centered justice, which has to do with the consideration that almost every citizen has suffered through the conflict. And that the fact that this is recognized by the community, by the government, and amongst themselves is already a first step to healing that can take place to get you out of that survival mode. And then the real story starts, the thinking together of what you want to do. Burundi is a very nice example as well, where people coming out of these cyclical conflicts started to dream. This is one of the, it's called an integrated project for farmers that we supported as the Netherlands, where we invited farmers and their families to make a drawing of their current situation and to make another drawing of what they dreamt of. These are often people who don't know how to read and write, but dreaming they can. And so this is the first spark to get out of this survival mode, to allow yourself to dream to what you would like to do in your life. And then the next question will come is that, what do I need to make my dream reality? And you look left and right, you have your family, your kids, then it would be good to send your kids to school because you need them to realize your dream. Or should I also consult my wife, ask her what she thinks of all of us, of all of this. So long story short, through the lens of agribusiness, we kind of helped families to realize their dreams, which had to do with another animal or another product to produce and get more knowledge on how to do that. And this had a snowball effect in such a way that the family next door saw that this family is doing much better and wants the same. And so this was a big success in Burundi, where at some point we grouped also different services around these communities, a health service or service on the production methods, but also encouraged them to express what they needed to be successful in life. So that meant also they could ask the local authorities, why is this road not done in the right way? Or give us some lights that helps also with the studying of our kids. Things like that make that people have seen literally the lights. And I believe that these processes at home, that women can play a key role as they are put in the middle of the circle. Instead of that, it's the man that has to bear the burden. And once you are all, including all family members, it becomes a different exercise. And then I think this is what we call the bottom, the foundation of a nation. And then the rest comes. And I think that's once you've done that, or you are succeeding in making progress on this, it means that people are more open to work towards peace because they want to keep that.
What makes the biggest change to have women on the table or to join, let women join?
Well, we all know is that when you dream about the future and you want to realize your objectives, is that this is an individual thing. And if you look at a family of or communities or a population as a whole, if you miss out on the dreaming on the female side, it's not complete. And it is all sides that you need in order to come to positive thinking and steps forward together.
You work in regions with so many conflict and so many complications. Like, how do you still keep the hope?
For me as a diplomat, I, of course, am privileged that I come from a country where there has been a long period of peace and security. And my task is then to represent my country in this particular context. And when the context is full of conflicts, it means often that people are very negative about what we can still do or realize in the relationship between my country and the country where we are as a guest. The way to do it, I think, is that in the context that is often considered as impossible, still look for what is possible. I don't believe that there are contexts, even in the most difficult circumstances, that there's never something that we cannot do. So, but with other words, in the context of impossibilities, there's always a possibility. And by exercising as a diplomat in these kinds of situations, I always see, and it has to do with people and energy and women, especially, who guide us as diplomats in order to connect with the right energy in society. And even if it concerns small pieces of progress, often they can guide us into the right direction with who they are. Example, Mali, a country completely ripped apart by conflict, jihadis, local conflicts between herders and farmers, other countries that are meddling in. And still there are young female entrepreneurs who are doing business, you know, and they do business with each other. They come with innovative concepts, and their optimism is very infectious. So to work with them and see that they are still thriving, even if it's hard, means that even in complex contexts, there are always people who are driving this force. And it's up to us to tap into that and to support them, not because they are like us, they are doing their thing in their country. And that's beautiful to see that and to see how can we accompany.
Why is it so important to strive for peace and women's security?
Well, I'm a female diplomat, so I recognize in other women their professional interest and the drive to realize something. And that makes the conversation completely different. I think it has to do with that as women, you connect perhaps easier. At the same time, it is that professional respect between us to know how important it is that we back each other up and that we are there to make this progress a common effort. At the same time, if you talk about conflict and post-conflict context, it is often a community effort. So it's men and women. But for me, as a female diplomat, I always look for the female change makers to see if they need something. And if they need something, we can think about what that is. And often these are small things that make things better for the whole community.
Was there a point that you decided that gender will play a crucial role in your journey?
I realized that gender is a crucial perspective, literally in all my postings. We're going from Pakistan with the honor killings to support the women that were attacked by often their own family members, to Burkina Faso, where women were the driving force, often on the land as farmers, but also wanted to be part of political decision making. Cuba with the Damas de Blanco, who were supporting independent journalists and human rights defenders, and were marching every Sunday on the Malecón in order to ask attention of the world for their partners in prison. Yeah, so, well, we all know about Afghanistan, the very brave women there who kept marching even when the Taliban took over to ask for education for girls. Well, Burundi, same with women, often united in all kinds of associations and demanding to be heard also by the politicians. So especially, I would say, in peace and security settings, it's the women often that strike a chord with us, and I think also with their leaders, as people in general realize that we need them in order to make this work.
For instance, in Mali, like, what do you want that to know, that they know about their own power?
For me as a diplomat, it's important that the women that we work with and that we meet in the countries where we serve, is that they know their own power, and that we accept as Western women that they know best on how to capitalize on their power. So in all processes, when it comes to working towards peace or finding the right response to violence, very much local contexts are determining how successful we can be as partners for them. And so for me, I like that a lot about diplomacy, is that you learn to listen and also respect timing, because we want things quick, but it doesn't work that way. So then it's about, who do we need to make this work for them, as peace in their country is also beneficial for us.
Why is listening so important in your field?
I believe that listening is important because very quickly we get caught up in Western perspectives, and we forget that the rest of the world is much bigger than us, and that if we want to have a more peaceful world, it means that also we should understand better where the other party is coming from. That being said, it is very important for us, those who have the privilege to work on the subject, to realize what we want to achieve and what our interest is. And I think the common interest in peace and security is that you empower others to contribute to the same that we want, which is stability, peace and security.
Is there another side as well? Is there a more challenging side of working in this?
The challenging side of working in crisis and post-crisis context is that when there's violence, it means that we have to bring different disciplines and different perspectives together. So I'm thinking about the military aspects, the civilian, often also the civilian security sector perspective. So I'm thinking about police and the whole justice chain. So we're talking about the whole setting of rule of law here. And that is exactly what is being undermined and being attacked in a conflict situation. And in order to make repairs or preserve that structure that is still there in a conflict situation, it's very difficult to keep supporting those who still know how it was supposed to be in a rule of law setting. So this is also an interesting part of our work, is to identify those who are still there, who know what a constitutional court is about, who know what checks and balances are about, parliament versus government versus the judiciary sector. I truly believe in investing in people, men and women, in those structures, so that when the right time comes, they are ready to go back to the middle and make it whole again.
Like, you are literally in the place where it happens, and then you work with all these different fields. Like, in what way can it sometimes take a toll on you?
Working in the field can be very intense, because we all want to be successful, but your success is not only in your own hands, you need other people for that. And so the challenge is to be patient and to not be disappointed when things don't happen the way you would like them to happen. And to be flexible to say, okay, this is not, A is not, plan A is not working, plan B is not working. Perhaps a little bit of plan C can work, and to be happy with that. I think also there the whole spirit of teamwork comes to the surface, is that you need each other to feed energy to keep going, and to see also the beauty in small successes. That's how I see it.
What is currently on your mind that you feel we need to make more visible?
What's currently on my mind is that a lot of people, myself included, have the feeling is there are bigger movements in our surroundings, big geopolitical developments that leads to the feeling that you don't have any control anymore. When you talk about peace and security, these are big subjects, and still it affects us as a citizen, as a person, whether you are a man or a woman or a child. And so the question comes, what can I do to make this right? Or what can I contribute? And this is a difficult one for a regular citizen. And I truly believe is that every little thing helps a bit. As a diplomat, we can actually contribute a lot, even if it seems small from our own perspective. So when you speak about the wars in Ukraine and also in the Middle East, I think it's the solidarity that must be shown with those who work towards peace. And this solidarity can be done by expression of words. I support you. I'm there with you. You can do it through funds, of course. And you can also try to influence all the different actors around this conflict and in the conflict itself in order to contribute. So this is the heart of diplomacy. And unfortunately, when conflicts get too violent, of course, we need to have all the instruments of our foreign policy, including also military contribution.
Are we currently opening our eyes enough to what's happening in like Ukraine, in Gaza, in like all the conflicts?
So I think even if you as a citizen feel sometimes powerless in this world where bigger geopolitical movements result into conflict, as a citizen, you can always ask, do I understand this right? It's often about good information, that you inform yourself in the right way, which is not easy in this world of disinformation, hybrid threats, of powers that want us to believe something else that is far removed from reality. So for us, but also our partners in the partner countries where we are, men, women, the youth, we should help them to maintain a clear vision, because only with a clear vision, you can also form an opinion and make sure that you are being heard. So to support people in conflict in Ukraine and, for instance, in the Middle East, this is about expressing your support in words and in action. And the action can be that you contribute to those who are there, the humanitarian partners, of course, but also to join, for instance, also the military force of our own country that also contributes in the end to peace. So for each one of us, it's the consideration which track or which perspective you want to take.
With all the pain in the world currently, like what do you wish for or hope for?
In these turbulent times, I hope that people keep an eye for the truth and see what is actually happening around them, and also realize how powerful they are, in fact. And for me, as a diplomat in these turbulent times, I feel the obligation to be there and to contribute in my profession. As I have seen now, is that when it comes to peace and security and trying to contribute in these crisis and post-crisis context, is to learn the lessons of all these other situations that we've been in. Because in the end, it comes down to struggles about certain issues, land, visions, etc., but also addressing the need for the population to live in peace, which is also universal. We should not forget that.
Why do you go every day again to your work to to keep on fighting for this?
I'm going every day to work because I have this inner motivation to make a difference. And the difference in this context means for me that other people feeling the energy, they are energized by our work in taking up their share. So let's do each one of us our share in order to work towards peace and security, which means I'm a diplomat, but others are entrepreneurs, or you're a military, or you're a citizen writing letters to the government, or you are in parliament. It doesn't matter. As long as we still believe is that we ought to know the truth, what's happening around us, and knowing that you can contribute.
What means fairness to you?
Fairness for me has different aspects. It can be a feeling, is that you feel that this is fair or unfair, and that depends on where you're coming from and what your framework of reference is, what is fair and unfair. But we also have developed the system of rule of law, where the principle of fairness, equality, is a very important assumption and a right for each one of us. And because we are the way we are, we need that system of rule of law to remind us that equal rights is a fundamental principle that is very, very important to come to a common understanding of peace and security. What is that exactly?
But that's actually an interesting question that you, because what is women, peace and security exactly?
For me, it has different aspects. Of course, we all know Resolution 1325 and the resolution that came afterwards, where women are not considered anymore as victims, but also as active participants in the processes of coming to peace. And one way or another, this still is a thing. We still need to do our homework. And that has to do with the fabric of our societies, of our cultures, of habits that need to be changed towards a more equal participation in this process. And thus, men and women need to step up in order to realize that.
What were successes that really stayed with you and that keep you motivated, even if they were very small?
The smallest success, but the most important one, I would say, is the glance of recognition in another woman with whom I'm dealing professionally, and that we have the same understanding what needs to happen, and that she feels that I am with her and she's with me, and that we take both our role in order to get there, which doesn't have to be the same. That's probably it. So then I know, okay, she's got it and I've got it also. So let's try to do this together, which means that there is a little spark of inspiration, and that is all we need. What is wonderful, I think, about working towards peace and security and thus working in the context of crisis and post-crisis is that a lot of noise that you normally have in, for instance, in political debates, in your headquarters, it drops out because people are in an emergency. And it means that creativity comes to the surface. Is that, yes, we can do this according to the book, but this situation asks for a quick response that is good for those who are in this situation. And thus, I can think broadly and think out of the box. And for me, that gives great energy. And this is what I like about civil-military cooperation, is that you bring both strengths to the table and think creatively, what does the situation need from us? And what is my role and what is your role? If you make that in a connect, do that in a connecting way, it means that you have put your energy in the right place. And that gives energy. Of course, we have times when you think, oh, this is very hard. Why am I not succeeding? And it means that often you're tired, you need new energy, and it means that you look at it again, but then perhaps from a different angle, from your neighbor, and then perhaps it works. And so you're learning constantly. You're learning constantly because what works here in The Hague doesn't work in Mali. And what in Mali works doesn't work in Afghanistan. And sometimes there are things that are working everywhere. So you're playing with what you're learning along the way, keeping your inner motivation alive by seeing that you're still just a little part of the big picture.
And if you see, like, in your career, like, what by working in a country with lots of conflicts, like, how did it change you? Your vision on peace or security?
I think it's working in these contexts make you accept that you never will be in control to change the whole picture. But by a clear observation of what is happening around you and understanding your role, then also you can understand your power. And then you connect your power with everybody else's power. And then things are going to the right direction. And I think we all have this feeling of being overwhelmed by the greatness of movements around us. But I truly believe is that trying again and again and again to find an entrance into the right track with your team and with other people that you're working with, men and women. And I think the women perspective for me is important because, like in my own culture, also in other cultures, we recognize is that we need to do the extra mile in order to be heard, in order to get recognition for our contribution, I think. And so if we do that together, much better. Then another one is that often in order to get to peace and security, it's more difficult for women because they need to change the fabric of the society that they are part of and of the peace processes or the conflicts that they are also part of. And what I get from my contacts with women in the various countries that I served is that you need to be courageous to achieve change. And so you have to team up. Don't do this alone. You need the others. And then it becomes something.